If you have your Bibles, let me invite you to open them to Amos chapter 5. Amos chapter 5. In recent years, there's been a lot of discussion, and I don't have to tell you this, over the issue of separation of church and state. The authors of our Constitution were concerned that no state church should exist in America. But this original intent by the framers of the Constitution has been twisted until today. This doctrine of separation of church and state has been used to help create a secular society, a society without God. Many of you have lived through the changes that have been made, prayer being removed from school, nativity scenes being removed from town squares, the Ten Commandments being removed from public buildings. And this has been done largely to keep the Christian religion behind the church house doors, away from real life. Even in the church, we have allowed this dichotomy between the sacred and the secular to influence our thinking. And so we have, possibly without even realizing it, compartmentalized things into these two separate categories, things that are sacred and things that are secular. If you go to church, that's spiritual. But if you go to work, that's secular. If you pray, that's spiritual. But if you work in your garden, well, that's secular. The work of a preacher is spiritual, but the work of an accountant is secular. And when you look at it like this, you soon realize that if that's your definition, then only a very small portion of life will fall into the arena that we call spiritual. We'll come to church on Sunday, and if you come on Sunday morning and stay for Bible class and come back on Sunday night, if you come on Wednesday night, if you're a daily Bible reader and maybe the combined readings during the week equal about 2 hours, that all totals up to about 6 hours involved in spiritual activities. That's half a day. And then 6.5 days are in the secular arena of life. Now, I don't have to tell you that if that's the definition that this world buys into of Christianity, if that is our definition of Christianity, Christianity is not a very practical religion. It only covers a tiny portion of our entire life. And is it any wonder that so many folks out there don't even want to get involved in Christianity for the simple reason that it seems irrelevant? It seems impractical. Well, this morning, I want to challenge that notion. In fact, I want us to look again at God's definition of Christianity as a religion that is first and foremost a practical, everyday religion that covers all areas of our life. When we compartmentalize our lives between the sacred and the secular, I'm convinced that we are involved in wrong thinking. In fact, we fall into the very same trap that ancient Israel fell into in that northern kingdom of Samaria. And Amos came and challenged their thinking because they had done the very same thing. They viewed their time spent in the assembly, worshiping God, as a very different time from their own time, their secular time outside of the assembly. They had confined religion to what was done in the worship service alone. And so when the Sabbath was over, They went back to work, and they left God behind in the church house. Now, anytime that you remove God from any area of life, it is predictable that ungodly habits will develop. You take God out of any arena of your life, and God's presence will be replaced by things that Satan will place in that void. You take God out of the family, and the family will go into moral decline. You take God out of a nation, and that nation will become less and less righteous. And we see it, don't we? It's happening all around us. But God has always defined His worship in a very different way than many today are defining Christianity. God has always insisted on being involved in every area of our lives. Look here in Amos chapter 5, beginning down in verse 21. Amos comes to these people who were always there on the Sabbath to offer their worship to God. But once they left that place of worship, they forgot God. And this is what God says to those kinds of people. Verse 21, I despise your religious feasts. I cannot stand your assemblies. Even though you bring me burnt offerings and grain offerings, I will not accept them. Though you bring choice fellowship offerings, I will have no regard for them. Away with the noise of your songs. I will not listen to the music of your harps. But let justice roll on like a river, righteousness like a never-failing stream. You see, they thought it was enough to worship God on the Sabbath and then go out and live like the devil Monday through Friday. Back in chapter 2, Amos points the finger at these people who were convinced that they were living religious lives serving God, and he catalogs some of the sins that they were involved in. There in chapter 2, down in verse 6, this is what the Lord says. For three sins of Israel, even for four, I will not turn back my wrath. They sell the righteous for silver, and the needy for a pair of sandals. They trample on the heads of the poor as upon the dust of the ground, and deny justice to the oppressed. Father and son use the same girl, and so profane my holy name. They lie down beside every altar on garments taken in pledge. In the house of their God, they drink wine taken as fines. They were cheaters. They were dishonest. They were unfair in the courts. They flouted justice. They oppressed the poor. And they lived immoral, ungodly lives. You know what God says? God says, if I cannot be honored in your home and in your workplace and in all areas of your life, then I don't even want your worship. A religion that does not change our lives entirely is no religion at all. Christianity that is not a practical faith is not Christianity. Jesus is interested, yes, in what happens in our assembly. He wants us to worship Him as we've done this morning. But He is also vitally interested in what you watch on your television when you go home. He's interested in what we read and in how we dress and in how much we eat and in how we fill out our tax returns and how we work on the job. He's interested in every area of our lives. And if Jesus can't be the Lord of all, He won't be the Lord at all. That's what Amos said to those folks in Samaria. Jesus is concerned about the relationships that exist between us and our brothers and our sisters. In Matthew chapter 5, Jesus there in that Sermon on the Mount said, "Therefore, if you're offering your gift at the altar, and there remember that your brother has something against you, leave your gift there in front of the altar. First go and be reconciled to your brother. Then come and offer your gift." Jesus said, there are things that are so important that God will not hear your worship until you first take care of those things. And one of them is relationships with brothers and sisters. Did you know that what you do Monday through Saturday is capable of completely nullifying anything you might do here in the church house on Sunday? No, if we don't have the practical, everyday part of our life in tune, then even our worship is a sour note in the ear of God. Well, how can we avoid being influenced by a society that is increasingly crowding God out of all the areas of our life, moving God into the margins? How can we allow our faith to influence every corner of our lives when we live in a world like we do? Well, here's how. By understanding that our God makes no division between the sacred and the secular areas of our life. That's a man-made doctrine. That's not a God-made teaching. For the Christian, all of life is sacred. You know, I've heard preachers complain, and I've probably done it too. I've heard church leaders complain, you know, only 10% of the church does 90% of the work. You ever heard that? Well, I don't know that that's necessarily true. I don't know that that's ever really been true. It all depends on how you define church work. Look at Paul's definition of church work. In Romans chapter 12, the first two verses, Paul says, "Therefore, I urge you, brothers, in view of God's mercy, to offer your bodies as living sacrifices, holy and pleasing to God. This is your spiritual act of worship. Do not conform any longer to the pattern of this world, but be transformed by the renewing of your mind. Then you will be able to test and approve what God's will is, His good, pleasing, and perfect will." You know how he defines church work? Offering your body as a living sacrifice before God. That doesn't just happen on Sunday morning, and that doesn't just happen when you're doing church-related things, or what we typically define as church-related things. All of life is to be a spiritual sacrifice for the Christian. One long living sacrifice from morning until bedtime. And if you work at your job with integrity, and you do your best to give a fair day's work for your pay, and if you're doing that because you're a Christian and you want to honor God, then you are involved in spiritual activity. Colossians chapter 3, verse 23, Paul said, "Whatever you do, work at it with all your heart as working for the Lord and not for man." And all the fathers and the mothers who work hard to provide for the needs of their family, and they come in tired, did you know that's church work? 1 Timothy 5:8, "If anyone does not provide for his relatives and especially for his immediate family, he has denied the faith and is worse than an unbeliever." And for parents and for grandparents that are training up their children in the Lord and putting a roof over their head and food in their bellies, that's church work. All who work diligently to provide for the needs of their family are exercising a spiritual, God-given duty. Now, we talk about church we use this language that I wish we could get rid of, where we talk about preachers who are involved in full-time work. You know, you hear that. You know, full-time work. If you're a missionary, if you're a preacher, you're involved in full-time work. It implies that everybody else is a part-timer. Let me tell you something. Selling cars can be just as sacred as preaching the gospel. Teaching school can be just as spiritual as serving as an elder in the church. In Colossians 3:17, whatever you do, in word or deed, do all in the name of the Lord. Now, let me be clear about this. I'm not suggesting that every job that we do is automatically spiritual. It depends on the attitude of the one doing the work. The difference between spiritual and secular is doing it unto the Lord. It's the man or the woman who gets out of bed in the morning and says, "Lord, this day belongs to you. I am open to being used by you in whatever way you see fit. If you want to bring an interruption into my life, I'll view that as something you brought my way, and I'll serve you to the best of my ability. I will serve others. I will be honest. I will be a man of integrity. This day belongs to you, and I give it to you in service." Growth in spirituality is not to be equated with the expansion of the religious compartment, but with the degree to which we are able to glorify God in every single thing that we do. Remember Jesus as he began his ministry? It's recorded there in Matthew chapter 3. He was baptized by John in the Jordan, and immediately the dove came down and the voice of his Father spoke from heaven saying, "This is my beloved Son, with whom I am well pleased." That was before Jesus ever preached his first sermon. That was before Jesus ever performed his first miracle. He had been working for 30 years as a carpenter, and now he goes down and he's baptized, and God voices his approval and pleasure in Jesus. You see, God is not just pleased with preachers and missionaries and elders and full-time workers. Let's quit using that term. He is pleased with ditch diggers who do what they do to the glory of God. And there are going to be times when we have greater demands placed upon us than at other times. And young mothers of little children, don't let anyone ever make you feel guilty because you're not doing more church work. There is nothing more sacred and more holy than you can ever do than loving your children and raising them up and helping them learn to love Jesus. That's the highest job around. No, Christianity is a practical religion. Christianity teaches us how to live for God wherever we are and whatever work we're involved in. In Corinth, those who came to Christ were troubled, and they were thinking maybe they should make major changes in their life in order to be more pleasing to God or in order to be more spiritual. And Paul says, no, no. He says there in 1 Corinthians 7, "Nevertheless, each one should retain the place in life that the Lord assigned to him and to which God has called him. This is the rule I lay down in all the churches." He says, are you circumcised? Stay that way. You don't have to be uncircumcised to be more holy before God. Are you a slave? Stay that way. Serve your master as if you're serving the Lord. You'll honor him in that capacity, just as well as if you're a freedman. You don't have to become a preacher or an elder or a deacon to be more pleasing to God. Lydia sold purple to the glory in praise of God. Simon tanned hides to the glory of God. Zacchaeus began collecting taxes honestly to the glory of God. Cornelius commanded Roman soldiers, and he did it to the glory of God. No, Christianity is something that pervades all areas of life. James talked about practical Christianity last Sunday. Sunday evening before last, we honored the LaCrosse family in their adoption of these three beautiful children. And James talks about people who do that. You think their time has changed in the way they spend their time going from a couple to having these three children? James says if anyone considers himself religious and yet does not keep a tight rein on his tongue, he deceives himself. And his religion is worthless. Religion that God our Father accepts as pure and faultless is this: to look after orphans and widows in their distress and to keep oneself from being polluted by the world. No, Christianity is so practical, it governs all areas of life. How we talk and how we think and how we act and how we work and how we parent. And so the question that I'll leave you with, our time is gone, the question I want to leave you with this morning is simply this: are you allowing Jesus to be the Lord over every square inch of your life? If you're a little bit like me, then you probably need to make some changes. I think we all do. If you're ready to make some changes, we will pray for you. If you're ready to make the most fundamental change of all in your life, if you've never been baptized, no better time than now. If you need to do that, if you're ready to do that, we invite you to come down front while we stand and sing this song.